This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of the Naz and Wally Sports Hour, heard Sunday mornings at 9 on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740.
The world doesn't need another sports show. It needs an awesome sports show. You're listening to the Naz and Wally Sports Hour on Zoomer Radio. Good morning, Naz. Good morning, Wally. The boys are back. Let's talk sports.
Good morning. Welcome to the Naz and Wally Sports Hour. We are live from Liberty Village in downtown Toronto. My name is Walter Rigamond. Joining me as usual this morning, my co-host, Naz Marchese. Good morning, Naz. How are you?
Good morning, Wally. How are you?
Yeah, you got full Blue Jays regalia this morning, Naz. You got the cap. You got the sweater. You got it all going this morning, Naz.
Yep, the Yankees lose.
The Yankees lose?
The Yankees lose.
I will.
Sorry, Lou. I had to do it.
It's my pleasure to introduce at this moment former Washington Capital, former Toronto Maple Leaf. Leaping Lou Franceschetti. Good morning, Lou. How are you this morning?
Good morning, gentlemen, on this great Thanksgiving weekend.
Yeah, it certainly is. So
it's pretty dark down here, I'll tell you.
Well, we had dark windows in the studio, but it looks like we're getting some overcast weather this morning. Gentlemen, we've just to let our listeners know we're dealing with the show today. Shortly coming up, we're going to have the Blue Jays repeat. Blue Jays beat writer for The Athletic, Mitch Bannon. Going to break down the Jays and the Seattle Mariners, which series starts tonight, middle of the hour. We have Jay Skursky from the Buffalo Evening News, going to bring us up to speed on the Buffalo Bills. Not a great result last Sunday against the New England Patriots. And later on in the hour, we have our good friend, sports card impresario, John Amendola. John, we've got to listen to this one. He had two interesting guests up at his location up on Jane Street in Woodbridge in Vaughan yesterday. So we're through. Listen, we're gonna have some fun with John Amendola talking about some interesting guests that dropped by his store yesterday. So we're gonna have some fun with that one, Lou. We'll give you an opportunity. Jays, Yankees, how do you want to react to how that series ended? And we'll let you put it in your words.
Well, guys, let's get this out of the way first, okay? I would rather be where I am with the Yankees winning on a regular basis instead of once every 10 years getting to the league championship, okay? And maybe even winning a championship once every, 30 years? So let's get that out of the way. The Jays deserved to win the series. The Yankees didn't play up to their capabilities. Their mistakes came to the forefront with Chaz, and I think it was a seventh inning, if I'm not mistaken, when they blew the game wide open. It was an easy ground ball, easy double play. He muffed it. The Jays came up with the big hits in the right time. The Yankees, bases loaded, none out, couldn't score any. Jays came up, Lucas came up with a big hit, two-run single with the bases loaded and two out, and that was after the Chisholm error. So I'm giving kudos to the Jays. They deserve to win. They deserve to beat the Yankees. But they're going to have their hands full with Seattle. Seattle's got four great pitchers. They got as much power as the Yankees do. They got the home run leader in Cal Raleigh. And they're a lot quicker and a lot faster than the Yankees are.
Naz, reaction to what Lou had to say and your thoughts on how the Blue Jays-Yankees series went down.
Well, the Blue Jays deserved to win every game. Even the game they lost 9-6, they were up 6-1 and blew the lead. But they came back the next night and won, and that's an important thing. Seattle's going to give Toronto a hell of a time, I'll tell you. They have a well-balanced team, and they're going to be very tough to beat. But I, you know, the Jays have a shot. They have a really legitimate shot.
Well, there's no question they have a shot. You know, I be honest with you, I don't even know what the betting line is. I think the betting line is the Dodgers
are ranked one and Blue Jays are ranked second.
Yeah,
so they're that's the favorites in the American League.
So they're favorites to win the series. So they're not underdogs. So we'll see how that series pans out. Certainly, the Seattle Mariners are going to be a test for them. No question about that. Mariners are a strong team in a lot of different ways, but you know, they've got to overcome. You know, they were playing late Friday night, so Lou, that's got to do some something to their pitching staff rotation. You would think, Lou.
It really is, and you know, to go 15 innings toe to toe with a team like they did, it's you know what, they had to use their starting pitching, and their starting pitching gave them two or three innings. And I think that's going to be the only problem right now, is some of their starters are going to be pushed back maybe a day or so. But listen, guys, you know, the game has to be played between the lines. And the Jays had better not take this thing for granted, because look what happened. Was it last year or 2 years ago that Seattle blew them out in two straight?
3 years ago.
When the Yankees were, or when the Jays were heavily favored. So, you know what, as much as you think that, you know, it's a big advantage to the Jays, they had better take advantage of the Jays because of this situation, because they're going back to Seattle for three after this.
Yeah, they are. So on that note, we're pleased to welcome to the Nazamwali Sports Hour the Blue Jays beat writer for The Athletic, Mitch Bannon. Mitch, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, guys. Happy Thanksgiving. How's it going?
Happy Thanksgiving to you, Mitch. It's been a long time since we had you on our show, but we couldn't think of anybody better this morning to talk about the Blue Jays and the Mariners. And Naz, Lou, and I were just having a wrap up of the Yankee series, but we're focusing on the Mariners. And there's some. I don't know if it's hit the wire yet, Mitch, if you got any inside scoop, but 10 a.m. this morning is a very important deadline. That's when the rosters for the ALS Championship Series have to be finalized. And any thoughts on who the surprises are going to be on the Jays roster? There's the talk about Bichette going in, but that doesn't look likely based on he seems to be limping around a bit. Chris Bassett, Max Scherzer. How do you see it all lining up, Mitch?
Yeah, I think 10 a.m. is going to be an interesting one in the way that 10 a.m. before the DS was, I think, a little bit of a surprise for people when Scherzer and Bassett weren't on the roster, though obviously still not ready, wasn't on the roster. I expect some changes for sure. I think on the pitching side, I would almost guarantee some changes. I expect at least one of Scherzer or Bassett to be on the roster. I'm not going to be surprised if it's both. Just going from a five-game to a seven-game series, having those three games in a row in Seattle, it's just harder to do kind of a straight bullpen game in the middle of those games, because you're going to have to use relievers the day before, and you're going to need more relievers the day after. So the length that those guys provide is going to be a lot more important. And also, like, the Seattle ballpark is gigantic, and one of the issues for Bassett and Scherzer has been giving up home runs, so you probably didn't want those guys pitching in Yankee Stadium, but pitching them in Seattle is maybe a little more palatable. In terms of Bo, I would be shocked at this point if he is on the CS roster, and obviously that's really disappointing for Bo, really disappointing for Jays fans. Like, he's been such a big part of this team for more than half a decade. He is, alongside Vlad, kind of the face of this team, and now they're going on this run and he has to watch from the sidelines. So I think they do really want him back. He clearly wants back. Like, he's out there trying his best running, but yeah, it just doesn't look comfortable yet. And they want a series without him. I think they're going to probably try to win one more without him as well, and hopefully get him back for a World Series.
Your thoughts on John Schneider's performance so far this year, Mitch?
Yeah, it's been pretty incredible. I think, like, you have to try to separate the manager from the team. And, like, obviously a part of how people view managers, like how people view John Gibbons, was, hey, those 2015 and 16 teams were really, really good. So people look back fondly on John Gibbons. I think Schneider's in the midst of kind of having his Gibby moment right now, just being attached to this really good team. But he's also just being at the ballpark every single day, watching basically every single game this team has played all season. He's just done a better job. I think it's hard to say otherwise. In terms of like the in-game decision-making, I think he's been better. Like, this team has used its bench way better. They've used the entire roster way better. But also the personal relationships. You talk to players, and Chris Bassitt says the communication's been way better this year. The veterans are all kind of in agreement on that. I think that the front office and the players are kind of more in lockstep this year, and I think Schneider deserves a lot of credit for that. He's kind of like the middle manager in between those two entities. So having everyone on the same page has been really important. And I think it's probably won them a few more games than they otherwise would have. And hey, that was the difference between them winning the division and getting that bye and not winning the division. So I think in a couple of weeks when the manager of the year voting comes out, Schneider's going to be one or two. I think he's got a real case to win it, but he will be a finalist for that award for sure.
Lou.
The Mariners, Mitch, I think are a little bit more balanced than the Yankees power-wise from both sides of the plate. Is that going to be a problem? Because Schneider has pulled all the right strings so far with the bullpen day and bringing in the proper relievers at the right time. And obviously Seattle's going to give you a battle with a lot more speed and a lot more power from both sides of the plate. Do you see that being a key factor in the series?
Yeah, I think that's like probably one of the reasons I don't think we'll see a bullpen game. Like the way that bullpen game against the Yankees was managed was so interesting to me, in that they like basically used their top dog relievers for the top of that Yankees lineup. Like they brought Sir Anthony Dominguez in the third inning to face Judge, to face Denton. And then they kind of used their B-tier relievers for the bottom of the lineup. And that just showed you what they thought of the Yankees lineup. We really got to get these top guys out, and then we can probably use someone else to get the less-known names, the Anthony Volpes, the Austin Wells's out. You're right, the Mariners lineup is a lot more balanced. Like, they got J.P. Crawford, who's a pretty good above-league average hitter, hitting in their nine-hole. And then they got guys from both sides of the plate. They have multiple switch hitters. They have power. They have contact. In a way, they're kind of similarly built to this Jays team, which has been a pretty pesky offense for other teams to try to navigate. I do think the Jays offense is better, so I think they have the edge in that department. It just will be not as simple to kind of shut down and get a lot of swing and miss. I think Cal Raleigh is going to be a problem. Like, he led baseball in home runs this year. He has torched the Jays throughout his career. He has hit the Blue Jays and hit at Rogers Center better than against any team or any venue in baseball. So he's going to be the Aaron Judge-esque guy to kind of circle and don't let this guy beat us, because he has ended their season before. He crushed them in that 2022 wild card series a couple years ago. And so I expect Kevin Gausman today and the starters going forward to really pitch around him. But then, yeah, you can't let Josh Naylor beat you. Julio Rodriguez still has a lot of upside. It is a balanced lineup, but compared to the Yankees lineup, I think it's a little worse. So I think the Jays pitching looked pretty good against the Yankees. So if they bring that same A game, I think they should be able to mitigate this lineup.
We're talking to Mitch Bannon of The Athletic. And for our listeners, if you want to read some really, really good Blue Jays material, Mitch is the guy. Check him out on The Athletic. I highly encourage it. Mitch, Trey Yesavage. He seems to have dropped from the planet Mars. Schneider had some fun with him in game four. I guess he was trying to play with the Yankees' heads, throwing him out in the bullpen. He had no intention of bringing him in. But, you know, I'm sure the Seattle Mariners, before he gets a chance to pitch, are going to try and figure this guy out. They all have these AI simulators and all these things nowadays. What makes him so hard to hit? Is it just the fact that he hasn't gone around the league yet? But what's peculiar about Yesavage that he was like almost unhittable, obviously, in the game against the Yankees?
Yeah, yeah. Well, I think he was unhittable in that game. You can argue it's pretty crazy. But Trey, like, to start, he's like a legitimate prospect. Like, this isn't a guy that's kind of like come out of completely nowhere. Like, he was their first round pick last year. A lot of people in ahead of the 24 draft thought he would go a lot higher than the 20th pick that the Jays ended up getting him at. He like had a busted lung before the draft, and some people think that kind of sunk his draft stock a little. It's clear whatever was going on there, not an issue right now. And so he is a legit draft prospect, and he did have like kind of the pedigree to perhaps be this good. I don't think anybody, including myself, saw it being this quickly. But now that he's in the big leagues and like his fastball clearly plays, his splitter is really, really good. It's like a big diving weapon that got under a lot of Yankees bats and made them look pretty foolish. Those play. But yeah, there is an element of like even like a not as high prospect or a random pitcher comes up. They have a little bit of an advantage in kind of their first couple games going throughout the league before the film is really good, before the game plan has really been built against the guy. But I think Trey's advantage is even more heightened because he throws from the highest release point of any pitcher in the big leagues. It's Justin Verlander reaching way above his head to come at you from a really high kind of angle. Trey throws even higher than him. And so you take like that unfamiliarity that teams have, and then you make it even more unfamiliar because they can't compare it to anything they've seen before. They can't be like, okay, you haven't seen this guy, but he's going to throw like this guy. It's going to feel like this guy. They just don't have that. And so I think when you pair those together, just the general unfamiliarity and then just how funky and weird he throws and the fact that his pitches are clearly very good, you get 5 1/3 no-hit innings against the Yankees. You have kind of the success he's had. It's a key for him is being in the zone. Like, he needs to players to feel like they need to swing in order to kind of chase his splitter. And we saw in, I think it was his second outing in Kansas City, he was a little less consistent around the zone, and they scored a couple runs against him. And like, the Kansas City offense isn't great. It's not like they figured something out and got to Trey. He just wasn't as sharp. But in every other outing, in that first playoff outing, he's been dialed in. So if Trey is dialed in and you haven't seen him before, he's going to be a problem.
Shane Bieber, last start out, wasn't very good in Shane Bieber's tone anyway. Do you think it's he starts game three for Toronto?
Yeah, I think they go back to him in part because I don't know who else they would go. Like, you're at the point in the season where you got your guys and you kind of got to ride them as far as they'll take you. And I think they're going to give Kevin Gausman and Treya Savage probably 4 starts if this one goes 7, but they got to figure out the other 3, and I think Shane is a part of that. He got hit really hard in that mm-hmm. Yankee series. I know that Schneider and the Jays got a little bit of flack for pulling him in the 3rd inning, but yeah, it didn't look like the Shane Bieber that people kind of expected, so he's got over a week to make some adjustments. We've seen him look really, really good at points this year. His first start back after Tommy John, I thought, it's like, oh my God, this guy might be the best pitcher on the staff after he carved through an okay Miami lineup. So I think they'll go back to him. I wouldn't be surprised if it's a similar, hey, we'll see how he looks in the first couple innings. If we need to pull the plug, we need to pull the plug. I think that's a reason you carry both Chris Bassitt and Max Scherzer, because you can't go 2 innings with Shane Bieber, go to the bullpen, and then have to throw a bullpen game the next day. You're going to need some length options. So I think it's the playoffs. Teams are going to be aggressive. If you don't look good, they're going to make a change. But I do expect them to give him the ball to at least start game 3.
Lou?
Do you think, Mitch, the Seattle starting 4 will have a little bit of a... I know after the first couple of games, but are they a little bit better right now than selection of the Blue Jays starting 4? And obviously with Seattle going 15 innings, how's their bullpen now with Suarez at the back end going to state with the Blue Jay bullpen?
Yeah, I think on paper, the Mariners bullpen is better. I think if you just like gave me these groups, they were both well-rested in a vacuum, I would take Seattle's bullpen. But that 15-inning game and like how that series against Detroit went, I'm still kind of grappling with like, okay, what do I think about this? Like, how much is this really going to impact the team? Like, they're going to come in today They're going to be filled with adrenaline. They're going to have momentum from that game. But then how much does this the rest they don't have matter? How much is the fatigue going to be real for that bullpen? Like, we saw their closer, Andres Munoz, he was throwing his fastball 3 miles an hour slower in that Game 5 outing than he has all season. Like, Jays fans know that feeling with Jeff Hoffman the last couple weeks of the regular season. Like, when your closer's velo is down, that's really, really scary. So I think there will be an element of kind of tiredness for the bullpen. The Jays got to obviously take advantage of that. But in terms of the rotation, I think it's kind of a similar story. Like, you stack the rotation up against the Jays' rotation, you think, hey, this looks a little better, but Seattle's rotation is kind of in chaos right now. Like, they used basically the entire rotation in that 15-inning Game 5 against Detroit. They're going to throw Bryce Miller on short rest in Game 1. This is, like, their number 5, their worst starting pitcher they're tossing out there in Game 1. It's a real opportunity for the Jays. Luis Castillo, who I know the Jays have seen before in big games, but he's just, like, not the same guy anymore. He's not the same guy on the road. Sounds like he'll probably go Game 2. That's another opportunity. Like, the Mariners' top starter is a guy named Brian Wu, who hasn't pitched in a month. Sounds like he might be back this series, but he's still not ready yet. And, like, when a guy hasn't pitched in a month, he's not stretched out. Like, he's not necessarily sharp. Like, on paper, their rotation is pretty good. But there is some definite chaos that's been thrown into that group that the Jays can take advantage of.
We'll be talking to Mitch Bannon really quickly. Mitch, we've only got a minute or two left in this segment. Much maligned $500 million contract, but seems to be earning it in the month of October. Vladdy Guerrero Jr., a couple of words on his performance so far.
Yeah, these are the moments he had to have. Like, you pay a guy, like, your salary is only for the regular season. Like, you pay him to have good regular seasons. He had a good regular season. But honestly, when you give a guy, like, a legacy deal like that, you give a guy a franchise-changing, a person-changing amount of money like that, you're giving it to him to bring greatness to the organization. And Vlad hadn't done that in the playoffs before. He'd really struggled in October. We've finally seen greatness from Vlad in October, and came against the Yankees, a team he obviously has a little extra edge against. We'll see if he can carry that into an even bigger stage against the team he doesn't have maybe as much animosity again.
Anyways, we've been talking to Mitch Bannon, Blue Jays writer for The Athletic. If you're into the Blue Jays and you want to read the best material out there, by all means, pick up Mitch Bannon at The Athletic. Mitch, we can't thank you enough. Your insights are remarkable. We appreciate you sharing your insights with our listeners, and we know this is a work day for you. Blue Jays are playing tonight, and we really appreciate you taking the time for us.
Yeah, of course. Anytime. Thanks, guys. Have a good one.
Mitch Bannon. Before we go to break, Naz, we're chatting really quickly, and we get Lou involved a minute or so here. There's another MVP for the Blue Jays, but she doesn't play on the field. The performance of Hazel May,
incredible, eh?
Over the last couple of weeks has just been otherworldly. For her having to be in the clubhouse with champagne flying all over the place, with guys losing their minds in terms of the F-bombs that are coming out of their mouths, and she's handling it with grace and class. I just say Hazel, you are fantastic, man. You are a real pro. Just remarkable, your performance in the last few weeks, Naz.
Yeah, she's amazing, and she has a job for life as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, she's just
incredible.
Handling what she has to do in those situations is really remarkable. Lou, really quickly.
You know what? I've known Hazel for a long time. She is a true professional ball player, if you want to sense it, in a female way. And obviously, she is married to a professional athlete also, so it gives her a little bit of inside information on knowing how to handle situations like what happened at Yankee Stadium there.
Truly remarkable. We've got to get her on a show someday. Obviously, she's working. Maybe after the season, we'll put in a request. Love to have her on the show. Anyways, we're going to take it to break. We've got Jay Skirsky of the Buffalo Evening News coming up. We're going to chat some Buffalo Bills football. We'll be right back.
It was a rainy day when Pizzaville surprised the big pizza conglomerates by introducing Pizza Romana. It's a crispy Italian sourdough crust that's oval-shaped with gourmet pizza toppings. The big pizza conglomerates complained because they don't have the Pizza Romana sourdough crust. I guess that's just sour grapes. Order your Pizza Romana at pizzaville.ca or on our app.
There are lawyers at Miller Thompson who know your industry. They'd like to introduce you to theirs. It starts with relationships. It's not just about happy clients. They support thriving business partners. Miller Thompson infuses law with the same tenacity you bring to your work, whether supporting your daily operations or offering urgent legal advice. But that's enough about them. Let's talk about you. Visit MillerThompson.com and find out how they can move your business forward.
Durham Region, the wait is almost over because Mint Inc. is coming to Ajax. Whether you're a collector, player, or just love the thrill of the chase, Mint Inc. has you covered with the hottest sports cards, Pokemon, and TCG releases. From live box breaks to tournaments and exclusive drops, there's something for everyone. Follow Mint Inc. on social media or visit mintinc.ca for updates on their opening and all the events planned. Mint Inc. Ajax, coming soon to Durham Region. Get ready to collect, trade, and play.
Passion. It drives entrepreneurs, small businesses, and fast-growing companies. And passion inspires KPMG Private Enterprise to help drive success. A dedicated audit, tax, law, and advisory practice, KPMG Private Enterprise is the number one private company advisor in Canada, navigating complex challenges to help you stay one step ahead of the competition. Search KPMG Private Enterprise, understanding what it takes to make your business even better.
MDF Mechanical has something in common with the Naz and Wally Sports Hour. A full-service mechanical company to building owners and developers in the GTA, we've been installing and servicing electrical, plumbing, and HVAC systems since 1986. And sometimes, Naz accuses Wally of blowing his own hot air. When we're not serving customers, the winning team at MDF Mechanical is listening to the Naz and Wally Sports Hour every Sunday along with you. So, let's enjoy the rest of the show. From one super fan to another.
The only thing I love more than sports is sports radio. Take it away, boys. The Naz and Wally Sports Hour on Zoomer Radio.
Good morning. Welcome back to the Naz and Wally Sports Hour. We are live from Liberty Village in downtown Toronto. We're pleased to welcome back to the Naz and Wally Sports Hour from the Buffalo Evening News, Jay Skirsky. Jay, good morning. How are you this morning?
I'm doing well. Good morning.
Buffalo Bills. It's a team that's close to both Naz and I's hearts. We've been long-suffering Buffalo Bills fans, but we've had a lot of success over the years. So we want to talk about this year's edition. Everything was going great until last Sunday, or maybe it wasn't going great. There were some concerning parts of the Bills game, but it's difficult to be critical of a team that's 4-1, but there's something... something about this team just doesn't seem to be clicking the way we would like, and probably more on the defensive side, maybe on the corners. Your assessment of the Buffalo Bills, in most charts, they were power ratings. They were the number one team, Super Bowl favorites until last Sunday. Where are we, Jay?
Yeah, I mean, they're still finding their way defensively, certainly, and maybe even a little bit offensively. I thought last week was not a great week for the Bills receivers. That's been a question, you know, really throughout the offseason and into the start of the year. They looked great in week one, but they have not really been able to follow that up as much. And I'm speaking collectively of the receivers there. Yeah, defensively, we knew there were going to be some issues, especially at the start of the season while there were dealing with some suspensions and dealing with some players that were hurt. And that has proven to be the case. Now, I think if you went into last week's game and you said that the Patriots would score 23 points, pretty much everybody would have, you know, expected that the Bills would win that game. And so I actually think maybe there were some bright spots coming out of that game defensively, while still acknowledging that the side of the ball that really needs to be cleaned up mostly has been the defense. So, 4-1, through five, I think that was a winnable game against New England that they let get away, and you hope that doesn't, hurt them at the end of the year. But, if they're able to get a win here Monday night against Atlanta, you go into the bye week at 5-1. Ideally, you can get healthy. Those players who were suspended, who I mentioned, will be back after the bye week, and maybe they add some reinforcements to that defensive line. And so, the sky is not falling, but to your point, there certainly have been issues within games that the Bills need to clean up. They have not looked dominant against some pretty bad teams. They handled the Jets pretty easily, but then you look at the wins over the Dolphins and the Saints, and they were not, to the caliber, I would say, that we know that the Bills can play. And it felt like they were playing with fire a little bit, and then, they got caught against New England.
They lost the turnover battle, which is surprising because all past couple of years it's been turnover-less Bills team, right? What are your thoughts on last week's performance by the
offense? Yeah, sloppy. I mean, yeah, it was sloppy. And to your point, 26 games in a row that they had either won or been tied in the turnover battle. And to not be able to do that, you turn the ball over three times and you only record one takeaway, that's a recipe for a losing football game. And that's exactly what we saw. And so, whether it was Keon Coleman putting it on the ground or Josh Allen and, making a pretty ill-advised throw that was intercepted, especially in the red zone, Allen didn't play his best game. I mean, let's be honest, right? He's not going to be Superman every single week, even though we've kind of come to expect that. Yeah. And that hurt a little bit too. So, yeah, I think, the takeaways, I should say the turnovers and the lack of takeaways defensively caught up to the Bills last week.
Lou?
Jay, you see the top teams that were favored to meet in the Super Bowl. You're looking at the Philadelphia Eagles. You're looking at the KC Chiefs. You're looking at the Buffalo Bills.
The Ravens.
Philadelphia has hit a stagnant part with their offensive part of the game. Are things getting a little bland on the offensive side with Brady making the calls that he is? Because I'm looking at the Philadelphia, and it looks like their offense is really stale. That it's nowhere near where it was last year. And our teams taking the so-called the advantages of the Bills not having a really number one receiver out of play.
I think there's there's something to be said for that. I mean, I mentioned at the start that receiver was a question mark for this team going into the year, and I think that, that continues to be the case. And, yeah, I thought that, Joe Brady, it was telling to me after the game against New England that Sean McDermott said it, he felt like the Bills were playing too cute at times. Usually that's an indictment of the offensive coordinator. And so you could tell that there was some frustration with Brady and from McDermott's part in terms of the game plan. And, when the Bills have been at their best this season, it's been running the football with James Cook and then relying on Josh Allen to throw it when he needs to. And I know that maybe sounds, counterproductive, or, you're talking about you've got the league MVP, a quarterback, but, this is not an offense that's built, I don't think, to throw it around the field 50 times a game. I think they really trust their offensive line. They really trust James Cook, and they can beat teams on the ground. And I think that, what I would like to see them do against Atlanta and moving forward is come out and say, we're going to run the ball until you guys prove that you can stop it. And then we'll throw it with Josh Allen if we need to. But I didn't think they really did that against New England. And so I think that's maybe what McDermott was referring to. Is it stagnant? Is it stale? I don't know that I would go that far. I mean, it is a 4-1 team, and you look at Philadelphia, as you mentioned, So every team in the league has issues, right? The Chiefs are 2-3. The Ravens are 1-4. Nobody's undefeated. Nobody's perfect. So I think that there are things that the Bills can clean up, certainly. But, let's see how they do that, right? Let's give them a chance to respond to this loss. This is a franchise the last, 3, 4, 5 years that have been really, really good after losses. They usually don't let one loss bleed into another. And so if they, if on Monday night they get a lot of these issues cleaned up and then you go into the bye week, well, then all of a sudden you're feeling pretty good again.
We're talking to Jay Skursky. Jay, Don't know what the status of Ed Oliver is, if he's going to be back. It looks like Matt Milano's out. Now, we've got these suspended players that are, which I know, I can't say that I know much about them. Maybe you can tell us a little bit more. They're on the defensive side. I'm still trying to figure out how to pronounce their names. Michael, is it Hecht?
Hoyt. Michael Hoyt.
Oh, yeah. That's great. We actually talked about him on our show back in March. And Larry Ogunjobi. Tell us, are they depth players, or are they capable of carrying a serious load?
I think Hoyt was signed to be a pretty big part of this defensive line. The Bills have been eyeing him for a couple of years now. He was with the Rams. Really versatile player, actually a Toronto kid, too, so that's kind of neat. He is, you can play him almost anywhere, right? He was a defensive tackle at one point in his career, all the way down to an outside linebacker. So very versatile, and I expect that he's going to play a pretty important part. And then Larry Ogunjobi, I think there maybe was a bit of a question, but now with TJ Sanders, their rookie who they drafted in the second round going on injured reserve, he's going to miss some substantial time. I think there's a pretty clear path to Larry Ogunjobi getting some quality snaps on the defensive tackle interior as well. So, yeah, I think both of these guys are going to be a pretty big part of the rotation along the defensive line. And especially in Hoyt's case, I think the Bills are counting on him to be a difference maker. I'm not going to say that he's going to, take over a game or be a Myles Garrett or anything like that. But I do think that, the Bills believe in his skill set. He's a player that they've been very interested in. And I'm in turn interested in seeing kind of how they utilize him in this defense.
Stephon Diggs, it was kind of tough watching what he did last Sunday. In some ways between him and the quarterback, May, they won the game. How did that go over in Bills Nation or Bills Mafia?
Yeah, I said this going into the game, right? I don't know that necessarily there should be any real hard feelings from anybody involved in the Stephon Diggs, whatever you want to call it, drama or divorce, whatever it was, right? Because, he was really good for the Bills, and the Bills were really good for him. And so whatever happened there and, whatever side fell out of favor, whatever it may be, I think it was a mutually beneficial relationship. I will admit to being a little surprised that he did as much damage as he did. I thought he would have a solid game, but I did not expect him to take the game over. And I think we should give Stephon Diggs a lot of credit. He's less than a full year removed from an ACL tear, and he looked dynamic. He looked like one of the best wide receivers in the NFL. And that doesn't happen unless you're putting in a lot of hard work. And I know that, Stephon Diggs, the celebrity, sometimes is almost more of a talking point than Stephon Diggs, the football player. But I think this was a reminder to the Bills and to the rest of the league that this guy is still a darn good football player. And so for the Bills, what happened? Well, their cornerbacks have to play better. Tre'Davious White's got to be better. Christian Benford, guy that they paid in the offseason, has got to be better. And I think that's what happened, is that they just didn't have good enough coverage on Stephon Diggs. And to his credit, he took advantage of it.
Are the New England Patriots and the Pittsburgh Steelers for real or not?
Well, the Patriots, when you look at their schedule, it is pretty darn easy. They're going to be favored in a lot of games moving forward here. Do I think that they're going to catch the Bills for the AFC East? No, I don't, because the Bills also have a pretty favorable schedule as well. That happens when you're in the same division. But I think that the Patriots are very much solidified themselves last week as a playoff contender. The Steelers, they're in probably the worst division in football, at least while Lamar Jackson is out and Joe Burrow is out. And so I think they're pretty fortunate in terms of what's going on in their division, especially at quarterback. Yeah, obviously Cleveland is nowhere, which is typical of Cleveland. And then, Baltimore's had kind of the season from hell, and Cincinnati just can't stay healthy, particularly Joe Burrow. And so I think for those two reasons, the Steelers are probably going to be there in the end, at least, competing for that division just because of the relative weakness of it.
Just a couple of minutes left, Jay. I'll turn over to Lou and then we'll wrap it up. Go ahead, Lou.
Jay, is with the trade deadline coming up, do you think there's going to be any future movement with the Bills, maybe on the defensive side, preferably on the back end and on the defensive back end?
I do. It's been pretty much Brandon Bean's status quo around the deadline, is that he usually does make a move. this is a team that doesn't have a ton of salary cap space, so they're somewhat limited in that regard in terms of what they can do. But I would be, I'd be quite frankly surprised at this point if Brandon Bean didn't make a move, whether that's at cornerback, whether that's at linebacker, maybe wide receiver, as we talked about as well. I would expect fully, though, that this team, it makes at least one trade to try to add reinforcement somewhere. What position that is, I can't tell you exactly. I think that, you know, this game Monday night might factor into that a little bit, just kind of seeing how it goes and maybe where they want to look. As I've mentioned before, they've got the bye week, so they've got the opportunity to do some self-scouting kind of after this game and really analyze the weaknesses on their roster. But yeah, I fully expect that the Bills would make a deal before the deadline.
Last question, Jay, before we let you go. Game against the Falcons. The Bills are getting a lot of prime time. The league loves, I guess, putting the Bills. The networks love putting the Bills on in the top slots. We got the Falcons. What kind of a challenge do the Falcons present?
Yeah, I mean, they've got a great running back in Bijan Robinson. They've got, you know, first-round picks everywhere on the offense, it seems like, with Penix and Kyle Pitts at tight end, Drake London at wide receiver. So there's a lot of talent on this offense. And, you know, we know that the Bills have struggled at times this season and in years past in stopping the run. And so I think priority number one for the Bills has to be to, you know, get Bijan Robinson on the ground. They've got to tackle better than what they have. They've had some issues with tackling in the past few weeks. And so if you miss a tackle against that guy, you know, he's got the ability pretty much every play to take it to the house. So defensively, it's, you know, limit the run, stop the run. Sean McDermott has usually fared pretty well against, you know, young quarterbacks. You can't call Penix a rookie, but I would say he's an inexperienced quarterback still at this point in his career. So I think that Bills fans should have some confidence in McDermott's game plan against the young quarterback. But, you know, for that to be successful, you got to stop the run first.
We've been talking to Jay Skirsky of the Buffalo Evening News. We've been, Jay, we can't thank you enough for taking the time for us on a Sunday morning to share your Buffalo Bills insights with a couple of passionate Buffalo Bills fans. So we got our fingers crossed. We hope this is the year we go to the promised land. Naz and I have been waiting for a while. I go back as far as remembering the 1964 AL champions. I'm sure you remember that one, Naz. Jay, you might be a little bit young for that one, but Jack Kemp and a few of those guys. So hope springs eternal. We got our fingers crossed for the Bills, and thanks so much for joining us and sharing your passion and your insights.
I appreciate you. Thanks very much for having me, and enjoy the game this weekend.
We certainly will. Jay Skirsky of the Buffalo Evening News. We're going to take it to break. We've got John Amendola. You're going to be. I haven't broken the secret yet, Naz or Lou. I don't know if you follow Mintink on social media. You would know the answer to this one, but John Amendola had a very interesting day yesterday at a great event up at his location up in Vaughan, and had a couple of really interesting surprise guests. So we're going to take it to break, and we're going to dive into that as soon as we come back.
It was a rainy day when Pizzaville introduced...
Pizzaville?
Right. When Pizzaville introduced Pizza Romana. It's a crispy sourdough crust, oval-shaped, with gourmet pizza toppings.
Pizza toppings.
It's so light and delicious, once you try it, Pizza Romana will be all you can think about. Call Pizzaville for...
Pizzaville?
Call Pizzaville for Pizza Romana, or visit pizzaville.ca.
Pizzaville.ca.
Passion. It drives entrepreneurs, small businesses, and fast-growing companies. And passion inspires KPMG Private Enterprise to help drive success. A dedicated audit, tax, law, and advisory practice, KPMG Private Enterprise is the number one private company advisor in Canada, navigating complex challenges to help you stay one step ahead of the competition. Search KPMG Private Enterprise, understanding what it takes to make your business even better.
MDF Mechanical has something in common with the Naz and Wally Sports Hour. A full-service mechanical company to building owners and developers in the GTA, we've been installing and servicing electrical, plumbing, and HVAC systems since 1986. And sometimes, Naz accuses Wally of blowing his own hot air. When we're not serving customers, the winning team at MDF Mechanical is listening to the Naz and Wally Sports Hour every Sunday along with you. So, let's enjoy the rest of the show. From one super fan to another.
There are lawyers at Miller Thompson who know your industry. They'd like to introduce you to theirs. It starts with relationships. It's not just about happy clients. They support thriving business partners. Miller Thompson infuses law with the same tenacity you bring to your work, whether supporting your daily operations or offering urgent legal advice. But that's enough about them. Let's talk about you. Visit MillerThompson.com and find out how they can move your business forward.
If you're into Pokemon, sports cards, or pop culture collectibles, Mint Inc. is the only place you need. Right off Highway 400 in Vaughan, Mint Inc. is the GTA's home for live events, trading experiences, and the best selection of cards and collectibles. They're an authorized PSA dealer, always bringing you the latest releases, and they're always buying cards, too. From Pokemon packs to sports slabs, toys, and more, Mint Inc. has it all. Check them out in Vaughan or visit mintinc.ca. Mint Inc. Collect. Play experience.
Opinions expressed on the Naz and Wally Sports Hour are those of Naz and Wally and their guests.
Are they ever wrong about sports? I can answer that in two words. Impossible. The Naz and Wally Sports Hour on Zoomer Radio.
Good morning and welcome back to the Naz and Wally Sports Hour. We are live from Liberty Village in downtown Toronto. And we're thrilled to welcome back to the Naz and Wally Sports Hour our good friend, the CEO of Mint Inc., John Amendola. Johnny, how are you this morning?
I'm great. How are you, boys?
Well, you sound a little bit rough, John.
That's how I sound every morning, because I stay up late yelling and screaming at the camera.
We'll get into that. But you had a pretty remarkable day. You had a couple of interesting visitors to your Vaughan location yesterday, John. Tell us all about that.
What a morning. Mason Fluharty and Trey Savage decided that they wanted to come hang out at Mint Inc. for a little while. And they ended up coming by, and they ended up hanging out for about 3 hours, talking baseball and ripping cards. And it was pretty cool. You know, Mason Fluharty is, you know, opening baseball cards, and he comes across a card, and he said, "Oh, that's my daddy, Salvador Perez," and comes across another card and says, "Oh, that's..." So I think I've convinced Mason that he's going to collect the collection of all the players that hit home runs off him, which is pretty cool. And Trey Savage, you know, talking to this young man was remarkable. Like, you know, he was in college a year ago. He looks at me and he said, "I was in college a year ago, man. They're telling me I'm not even going to be able to hear the pitch come in that place on Sunday night." So these guys are really, 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 they're kids, 22. They're so excited. It was a great day.
I hope you took proper precautionary measures then when he was opening those packs, that there's nothing he could have done to injure his arm.
Trust me, yes. We made sure. We barely let him breathe.
I was a little bit concerned because I know you sent me an email yesterday in the morning, or you sent me a text saying they were coming by, unfortunately I couldn't make it. And I said, I hope I don't have to read a press announcement tomorrow night that any of these guys injured their fingers or whatever opening up a pack of cards.
Imagine. Wouldn't that be something?
Anyways, congrats on that. I'm sure your customers loved it. I'm sure your staff did too. And it sounds like I saw the pictures that you circulated, and these look like a couple of really amazing young men who have their whole lives ahead of them. And your Savage, he's just an incredible pitcher.
Wild, like I said, to know that, you know, they're 22 and 24 and they're on the biggest stage, you know, at this part of their career, I think it'll be great. But they're just both incredible, like, you know, just incredible. And Trey Savage is, I mean, he's just a beast. If you follow the stats and, you know, you see where he releases the ball. It was funny. Mason, you know, we chatted for several hours, and you could see even Mason how, like, into Trey. Like, you know, he said, this guy's a beast. I told Trey on the way here this morning, you know, the customers are going to go crazy for you. Now, you know the vibe at Mint Inc. They loved it. You know, Trey said that to me a couple of times because the store was pretty busy a few times. And he, you know, we offered to great chill vibe. Nobody was bugging them. And of course, being the fine young men that they were, there was a couple kids in the store and they got right up and made sure they took some photos with them. And it was pretty exciting. You know, they spent their day off, literally their half a day off. They went from our store right to practice. So it was pretty cool. And I can tell you, they'll be back.
Yusevich, how much is this card worth, his rookie card, John?
Now, he's about 20X in the last 3 months. The same card of his that was 100, 200 bucks three, 6 months ago is $5,000-$6,000 now. So here's what you got to know.
Wow.
He's only available in the Bowman Draft product. Like, he just came up. He doesn't have a rookie card yet. He has prospect autos. And let's just say I was bidding on some of them last night and we're into the thousands. I was actually showing him some people, you know, 6 or 10 months ago. I was looking at the historic sales, and you can see where, you know, some really smart, savvy baseball people must have knew he was a special talent. Like, you know, if you know baseball and you watch where that release comes from, I don't think there's been anybody ever that lets a two finger pitch off so high up in the air. Like, it's, and even the way Mason was explaining to me, like, they watch a pitch ninja and the way he was explaining, you see all the angles of Trey's arm. He goes, quote unquote, they've never seen anything like it before. So yeah, just incredible. And, just really great guys. Like I said, I'm really excited. Listen, they're confident. They're coming back after they clinch.
Yeah, keep us posted, John. We certainly, we got to make sure we make it to the next one and let our listeners know when it's happening as well. Well,
like I said, we were blessed. This was, you know, it wasn't a public thing. It was very private. They just, you know, day off. But like I said, the people in the store really enjoyed it. And I can tell you, I think we're going to do a live stream with them. So we'll definitely keep it posted because we'll do lots of giveaways and it'll be just a great fun day hanging out with ALCS winning champions.
Before I turn it over to Lou, I do want to get it in to make sure we don't run out of time. You've got a new location, so tell our listeners all about that.
Yeah, Durham Region is coming on board. We're opening in Ajax. We're moving along here. We're just fighting the last little bit of permits, and I'm hoping to be open before Christmas. And we're also, we have a few more locations coming. I'll just leave it at that. 2026, we're expanding a little bit more in Ontario, maybe outside of Ontario. So it's a really exciting time. I've been telling your listeners for the last, 5 years now. It's amazing. I have a great story for you.
Go ahead.
Mickey Mantle.
Okay. Go ahead.
So your viewers will love this because I know a lot of them can relate. And Walter, we're going to talk about your collection soon because there's some real good stuff in there.
I'm ready. I'm ready.
Yeah. You've got one of the nicest Tim Horton rookies my vintage guy's ever seen. So about eight weeks ago, give or take 8 weeks ago, gentleman and his wife come in. He's got his two sons with them. And, you know, he's got to be in his 70s and his kids are my age. And we're having a conversation and he pulls out two cards. He pulls out a beautiful Wayne Gretzky rookie. And he pulls out a 1952 Topps Mickey Mantle, which is technically Mantle's second year card, but everybody knows, you don't even have to be in sports to know the 52 Mickey Mantle. It's the most iconic card, you know, blah, blah. And they tell me this story about how him and his brother had it and they played with it when they were kids. And it's been sitting in this box, safety deposit box, you know, they've had it since 1955. So we take this card and it looks really good. Now the amount of fakes and everything. So we post a video up, hey, collectors, this is a cool story. And, you know, the sad reality is the amount of hate that we got on the video, people talking about how fake it was and how we were a bunch of clowns and this and that. And you're talking about a lot of money here. This card was in beautiful shape. So right away, people see a card like that and they see in the condition and they say, oh, you know, must be too good to be true. Well, I'm happy to report that the card was definitely real and PSA graded it a PSA 5.
Wow.
And it's about a $250,000 card.
Wow.
An 8 just sold for $1 million last week. And as you know, we've talked about on your show before, there's 3 10s out there somewhere. Only one has ever surfaced, and they're about $35 million. So this family was very happy. Let's just leave it at that. So listeners that might be, you know, downsizing their homes or trying to figure out the next steps, or, you know, they have all this whatever they may think is junk. Well, I'll tell you, if you have old comics, old cards, old toys, collectibles, 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s, you got to hit us up. You're going to make some money. We'll take real good care of you. And I'll tell you, that vintage era and the vintage, like 40s through the late 70s is just absolutely flying. And they're not making any more Tim Horton rookie cards.
I feel good that I salvaged a very small part of my collection. And I'm thinking of all the ones my mother probably threw away. Oh my goodness. Shoulda.
You know, one of the coolest things in your collection are, you have a couple of 64, 65 checklists.
That the tall boys. Checked. Those are the tall boys, right?
Right, checked. And I know your generation, it was a big deal. You checked the checklist.
We checked them all.
That's how you would make.
No idea why those aren't checked.
So mint condition, because you must have had doubles, mint condition checklists are worth a like those checklists alone are probably worth $300-$500 each.
Yeah, I'm thinking of everything my mother threw away. Wow.
You had a box.
Who would have known?
Like much, but you know what? The grandkids got a couple years of tuition in there, maybe. You just never know.
We're going to turn it over to Lou. Lou, we got about 4 minutes left. I'll let you engage with John.
Yeah, we all wish our mother didn't throw those cards out, because I had a couple of thousand that I played.
Sure you did. All the guys you played with, too.
Yeah, and put them in between your spokes on your bike.
Yeah, exactly.
And let them rattle away.
And that's why the high-grade stuff is worth so much, because that was what you guys did with them at that time, right? You just played with them.
Well, that's the whole thing, right? Let's hope these two Blue Jays do a lot better than Alex Manoa and take the money that's on the table if they offer it to him. Because I know Alex Manoa, after his second year, the Jays offered him at least $100 million contract on a number of years. I'm not sure if it was six or seven. And Yosevich more or less accepts that, because you look at the fate that happened, that's happened to
Manoa
right now.
I think that, and Lou, you play pro sports. You know, the one thing I got off them, and you really saw it in that last game, it's like they're using all 26 players to win. The camaraderie they have there, I think it was a big deal with you know, them signing, you know, Vladdy and him coming out and having an almost MVP season. They both spoke really highly of the camaraderie right to the coaching. And, you know, like, they're letting this kid play. Look at Steven Strasburg. The Washington Nationals destroyed that kid's career. Like, this nonsense of, you know, Kawhi Leonard can only play 50 games and these guys. Like, could you imagine, Lou, in your day, the captain of your team sits back and says, screw it, I'm only playing two-thirds of the season? I think that just the fact that the team, the camaraderie that's there and the way this team is gelling, I think you're going to see these kids stay together for a little while. And I do kind of wish it was Detroit, not Seattle, but we got an advantage tonight. Seattle played 15 innings. They're flying from the West Coast. You know, we got our number one guy going tonight. I think we're going to take both games. I'll be there and I'll be cheering them on.
Yeah,
hey, John, I don't think the word maintenance was in our vocabulary back then.
Yeah, right? Like, I don't know, man. Like, I just saying. So I think the fact that they let this kid, like, show what he's got, and again, you guys know better than me and maybe even probably most of your listeners, baseball development is way different than most other major sports. You're high school right to the pros. There's not this unbelievable, you know, years of development. So I think it's great that at such a young age, they're letting them go.
Anyways, John, we're going to let you go. Just please keep us posted on any special events. If we get an opportunity,
I will.
If we get an opportunity to announce it on the air. You know, I know isn't there a big sports card expo coming up in early November?
Yeah.
Tell us about that again.
Real quick. First, thank you so much for your support. We had our annual golf tournament last month. We raised another whole bunch of money for youth mental health, which is very important. So thank you for that. Sport Card Expo, yeah, for anybody that's interested, it's the second largest show in the world. It happens at the Toronto International Centre right by the airport on November 6, 7, and 8, and 9. And the lineup of signers this year is phenomenal, too. So whether you want to meet a player, buy some cards, sell some cards, or just come check out. You have anything collectible, it's definitely place to be.
And you're going to be prominent. Minting's going to have a prominent place at that expo, right?
We have 1,000 square feet right in the middle. We're one of the major partners there, and I wouldn't have it any other way.
Anyways, I'll leave it at this. So we talked about checklists, and you can go take a look at my stuff, John. I had the 1966 checklist. You know, you remember which one that was, and if you look at it, I've got I've got Bobby Orr's rookie card checked off. Of course, I no longer have the Bobby Orr rookie card.
But you have the Tim Horton from the same head in same set.
I'd prefer having the Bobby Orr rookie card.
I sold the Bobby Orr 3 the other day for $7,000. You do wish you had.
And I remember I had more than one of them. I had more than one. I had two or three of them. I distinctly remember.
Traded for lunch money or something.
No, the long gone. That was part of the ended up in some landfill somewhere. Unfortunately. Anyways, John.
Worth so much.
Anyways, John, we're gonna let you go. It's always a blast talking sports cards. Always a blast. Congratulations. You know, John, you and I are in contact. You're killing it, buddy. You're doing amazing. Keep up the fantastic work.
I appreciate it. Thanks for the tremendous support, and happy Thanksgiving to all of you guys and your listeners.
Yeah. Lou, thanks. Thanks, John. Lou, thank you for all your contributions. Happy Thanksgiving to you and your family. And Naz, I always give you the last word.
Let's go Blue Jays.
Awesome. Hopefully next Sunday we come back on and either we've won or either we're headed to the World Series or we're close to headed to the World Series. Well, like, I can't remember if this series would be over by wouldn't be over by Saturday if they go 7 games. I don't think. Anyways, got to check the schedule. To all our listeners, have a fantastic and safe week. We'll chat again next Sunday morning.
This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show.